Hi friends, it's Brittany. Before we dive into today's episode, I have a quick ask for you. I need your help. I'm doing a short listener survey to get to know you a little bit better. Who's tuning in? What do you love? And how I can keep Conscious Pathways fresh, meaningful, and aligned with what you need. It won't take more than 5 minutes, and your feedback means so much to me. It helps me grow and helps this podcast to grow with you. You'll find the link in the show notes, and I would be so grateful if you took a moment to share your thoughts. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And now let's get into the episode. Hi, and welcome to Conscious Pathways, the podcast where we explore the intersection of education and social justice through transformative conversations. I am your host, Brittany, and I am so excited to have you here. First things first, if you would like to support the podcast, you can join my Patreon. I've linked that in my show notes below. You can join the Patreon for just $5 a month. You get early access to this podcast, my newsletter, monthly live streams, as well as you can do an ask an expert, which means you get to ask me specific questions that I can ask on the air for our guests to answer. And if you want to join that, again, that's in my show notes below. It helps support the podcast. I have a dream of eventually getting a podcast editor. And so that will actually help me support that. And that will free up a lot of my time and space to do more for this podcast and expand my reach. So if you want to support me, you can do that there. As always, just listening to this podcast episode and sharing it with your friends and your people and your colleagues, that helps me out a whole lot. So I appreciate you all for doing that and being here. With that said, I want to introduce this week's podcast guest, which is Dr. Sarah Toutant. Dr. Toutant is a director of diversity, equity, and inclusion at the Child Care Resource Center, which employs over 1,000 staff as one of the largest nonprofits in the state of California. She earned her PhD in urban education policy from the University of Southern California, USC. Dr. Toutant invests herself in causes, academic, professional, public, or otherwise, related to advancing equity and developing anti-racist practices. Dr. Toutant is an experienced DEI consultant who has assisted companies and organizations with installing practices that prioritize equity. I learned so much through this conversation with Dr. Toutant. She is just a fantastic woman. Great knowledge. We talked about higher education. We talked about DEI in the workplace and how we can help support that and what that looks like from a systemic perspective, and especially how we can support students in their activism and how we can support teachers in their activism in higher education as well. This is a great conversation, whether you're in higher education, whether you're interested in DEI work, whether you're interested in doing that in your classroom. We talked about all of it. So let's hop into that conversation. Thank you for joining me on Conscious Pathways. Welcome. I'm joined by Dr. Sarah Toutant. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk.
I'm so excited to have you on here. Tell me a little bit about your background in education.
So I have always been passionate about higher education specifically, and I started at the University of San Francisco as an undergraduate student, and then I navigated to my master's and PhD in education policy, specifically at the University of Southern California, USC. So throughout my journey in higher education, I have been passionate about advocacy, social justice issues, equity, diversity, and inclusion, and really creating a really good experience for students on campus. I have now matriculated outside of higher ed, but I definitely still have strong ties to academia and higher education.
What kind of inspired you to want to start studying education policy? Like, what was your thought process going into that kind of program?
That's such a great question. You know, honestly, when I first started thinking about higher ed, it really was focused on students. I was specifically interested in student affairs and the way that students are engaged with staff and faculty on campus, right? And what the student experience is and where can students go to find support, right? And that was my original motivation. But then when I got into the PhD in education policy, it was because I thought I wanted to be a professor. And I thought I wanted to really kind of, you know, be the change that I think academia needs to see and have more people and more professors, people that look like me, right? And, you know, although that didn't end up being my ultimate career path, I still think that higher education has a long way to go as it pertains to ensuring that students have faculty and staff that are represented, that are representative of the population of students. So, you know, it's something that I miss engaging with students like I used to, but you know, I still find ways to support as I can.
Yes, and that is something that I also didn't realize was so important, because my higher education journey started in community college, and I feel like that was pretty representative of, like, you know, who right. we were. But, you know, when I got my bachelor's and I went in person, you know, it's a primarily Hispanic serving institution, and all of my professors were pretty much people of color. Mm. And I had never experienced something like that before until, you know, I went to this specific school and I was like, oh, this is nice. I see myself everywhere. I'm walking through the halls and there's just brown people everywhere. It was an eye-opening experience.
Right. And for so many people, that's not the case in terms mm-hmm. of being a diverse range of folks. And, you know, I think that there's still a long ways to go to ensure yeah. that there is representation. And then mm-hmm. even beyond that, that just because you have a diverse space or a diverse population, that they're being included and they're being treated equitably. So yes. I hear you.
Yes. And on that subject of, you know, diversity and equity, tell me a little bit more about the work you're doing now, since you're out of the higher education kind of field, but what are you doing in this moment?
You know, it's so funny, because if you were to tell me 5 years ago where I would be now, I would not believe you. Oh, and not in a bad way, just because I think that life has a way of surprising you, and that anyone's career journey is exactly that. It's a journey. And I think that it's so important to be open to what transferable skills you might have. So currently, I'm a director of diversity, equity, and inclusion for a large policy and advocacy nonprofit organization. We have about 1,300 staff. And it's a massive undertaking, to say the least. But I oversee all of our diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives as it pertains to employees, and ensuring, just like I used to ensure that students had an equitable and inclusive experience on campus, now I do the same, but for employees in the workplace. So it's similar work in the sense of the diversity, equity, and inclusion and that piece, but it's a completely different field with different challenges and positives as well. It's not higher education, I'll tell you that.
I'm making my first kind of steps into higher education, so I'm sure I'll look back on this conversation and be like, you know what? I know what you were saying. I'm picking up what she's putting down now. Yeah. So as most people know, my work over the past couple of years has been under a lot of scrutiny. How has that experience been for you, you know, practicing it and training on it and, you know, mentorship and all of that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, to be honest, I'm still kind of navigating it, because, you know, I'll start with this. I think that if you want to go into diversity, equity, and inclusion work, it does have a large kind of burnout rate, just because it's people work. Anything that relates to people, you know, you're going to get a large burnout rate. Or turnover rate, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I'm currently kind of navigating that, because it's interesting. Other fields of focus, I is very much linked to what's going on in the socio-political climate at the time. Yep. So if we take ourselves back to 2020, the murder of George Floyd, DEI was... oh, we have to invest in it. This is where we need to go. This is the future. We need to ensure that companies in higher education and whatever type of institution, medical field, higher education, nonprofit, corporate, didn't matter, that everybody had to have a DEI team. Now what we're seeing is what I would consider an attack on DEI. But I mean, if you look historically, there's always been an attack on advocacy. There's always been an attack on standing up for the most minoritized. So I just think that this has been going on for decades. So I just think the field's going to continue to shift and change as anything does. Maybe it won't be called DEI in 5 years. Maybe it will be called something else. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that the companies and the organizations and the institutions of higher ed that are doing diversity, equity, and inclusion work correctly, they're not necessarily phased because they know how to navigate the turmoil, right? And if you've really been doing the work and it's not performative, it's not going to be too difficult to figure it out. What I will say is difficult is what I tied back to in the beginning, which is the burnout and constantly seeing what might be being said about DEI, constantly trying to have to convince and share with people what it actually is and what it's not. But in my career, I can say 10 times out of 10, really, when I explain what diversity, equity, and inclusion is, people are pleasantly surprised and are like, oh, well, that doesn't sound that bad. Like, that sounds like a good thing we should all be doing. And I'm like, right, it does. It really does. We should be inclusive of all people. Yeah, we should be mindful that some of us might need a little bit more support than others. Yeah, we should be mindful that when you have diversity, that ideas and innovation increase. Yeah, like, so anyways, I was going off on a tangent, but.
I was right there with you. I was like, yeah. And you brought up a really important topic, especially when it comes to DEI work, because a lot of the time, the full grunt of the effort and the full grunt of like the work is falling on the shoulders of, you know, BIPOC people. And burnout is incredibly high with this kind of work, right? So, you know, what kind of strategies or what kind of ideas do you have with, you know, people who are doing this work to kind of either taking care of themselves or preventing burnout, or what can companies do to also support people doing this work?
Oh, you got to take a vacation. I'm on vacation right now. I'm on vacation right now.
Yes.
You know, I think that you really, really have to do a few things. I think for me, and I could just speak from my experience, one of the things I do is I definitely take breaks when I need them. And that break can look like a day and it could look like 2 weeks, which is what's happening right now. It can look like, you know, ensuring that I'm blocking off enough time for myself outside of work to understand that I have a life outside of the day to day. That is so important. And I think whether you're in higher education or you're somewhere else, unplugging from work is critical. Especially if you're in DEI work. Another thing that I do as a DEI practitioner is I cannot constantly have my DEI hat on. I will be in a movie and I will be like, oh, that's not really inclusive, or they should have done this. And I can't do it. I have to turn off my switch just so that I can relax.
And so hard.
It is so
difficult. It is so hard.
I know it really, really, really is. But I noticed that I need it, because if I don't, I'm just angry all the time.
Yeah, understandable.
Right. Yeah. And then I think another thing that I like to do is I like to make DEI work fun. I like to make it, you know, with the workshops that I might do, or the way I talk about it, or how I might make a joke. Like, these are, I approach the work with candor is what I try to do, radical candor. And I think that really helps me also to avoid burnout a little bit. And I think also companies need to understand, companies or places of higher ed, whoever your diversity, equity, and inclusion team is, I think it's really important to be mindful that this work does and will take a toll on you. But what about you, though? I mean, sure, you hear about DEI all the time, how do you kind of navigate unplugging, if you will?
Yeah, I think a lot of what you mentioned, like, you just have to know when to take your break.
You know, especially I know me, it's just a Black woman. I tend to just do the most at all times, always, just constantly doing the most. And so it can be hard to recognize that in yourself when you're right. needing a break, because we just tend to keep pushing and keep pushing because, you know, you get that mentality of like, oh, because I can. But just yeah. because you can keep pushing does not mean you should keep pushing, right? And one of the most interesting, like, pieces of information I learned about burnout is that once you cross that threshold into, like, you are now burned out, it can take up to, like, 3 to 5 years to get back to kind of homeostasis, to where you feel like you're out of it. And that's something that I carry with me so much, right? I have to just kind of remind myself that if I'm not taking care of myself now, if I'm not taking that step back when I need to be taking that step back, if I'm not taking my breaks when I need to take a break, then it's going to be years, you know? And I feel like I did burn out. And so I kind of saw how that happened. And, you know, you get out of the thick of it, but the effects of it are still there, you right. know? And you can still feel the effects of it just there. It's so hard. It's like you're in this, like, foggy state.
Yeah.
For, like, years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, especially as you were mentioning your identity as a Black woman and just constantly trying to reach for the stars. I mean, we know by race and gender, Black women have the most, are the most educated in terms of formal education and higher education and bachelor's degrees. And, you know, I think a lot of us are really always trying, I don't know where it might come from as an individual, but maybe trying to find our place in the world, trying to show the world that we have a voice. And to, I'll say, like, when Black women are bored, like, we go get degrees. Like,
yeah,
and that's what I did. I did.
Not me literally looking at PhD programs last week.
Exactly. When I had finished my PhD, I had pushed too hard. I had pushed way too hard. So by the time I finished, everyone was asking, okay, when's the grad party? What are we doing? Da, da, da. I had a cute dinner with some close family and friends. And then for the next 7 weeks, I slept. And I just slept at home. I did. And it wasn't honestly by choice. I think my body just shut down. I'm not even going to lie. Yeah. But I came back. I came back better. But I learned my lesson not to push, because it's just not worth it at the end of the day.
It's not worth it. And your body it'll tell you, and give you the signs. It'll give you some warnings. It'll be like, hey, maybe you should take a break.
Right.
Go lay down. Take a nap. I'm tired. And again, sometimes we're just like, but I can keep pushing. And again, just because you can does not mean you should keep pushing.
Does not mean you should. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. Look, I'm working on a project. What I hope to come out of the project is that can help inspire or share my story with others, to share that, hey, I did everything the right way, if you will. I went to college. I got all these degrees. I got this big job. I did all this. And then what?
Yep.
And then what?
And then what? Yeah.
I think it's so important to find satisfaction in the present.
Yes.
And to know that career journey is a journey. And yes. I know we're not even talking about DEI, and I'm getting into something else, but I think it is related. I think it is related to ensuring, you know, just if you have to make an inclusive space for yourself too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's important still on that topic of knowing when to step back. I think, you know, in social justice, there's that idea of, like, you know, stepping up and stepping back, right? And in Western culture, we kind of get very individualistic, and it's very, you know, individual focus, me focus, what do I need, all those different things. And we kind of forget the collectivist part of it, where, you know, sometimes someone can step up, but sometimes they need to step back, right? And that leaves room for someone else to step up, right? And so that goes into building a community, and building a community of people around you, building a community, you know, where you're trying to work. And once you start doing that, and, you know, I'm incredibly lucky. I have just a beautiful and amazing supporting partner. And, you know, when I get into my doing the absolute mostery, he's like, hey, What if you just, what if you didn't?
Right. And that's such a blessing. It is.
Whether
it, and for people listening, whether it's a partner or whether it's a friend or or a family member, having someone to kind of anchor you back and remind you that it's not that deep and you need to sit down is so important. My husband is the same for me and constantly reminds me when it's okay to sit down and eat a box of sweet treats and watch a show and forget about the world for a second.
Yes, that is so important. Find you a person who will keep you in check. You can't control me, but you could tell me like, hey, it seems like you're a little tired. Do you want a snack? Here's a blanket. Let me put on the office for you. And I'm like, oh, that's nice.
This is nice. Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Just my husband knows, give me a sweet treat, a donut. Yep. Brownie, something.
There you go. There you go.
And I'm good.
Yes. Yes. But shifting gears a little bit. So in terms of, you know, your work in DEI and the work that you're currently doing, you know, how do you kind of ensure, how do you measure the success of, you know, a program or a training or, you know, an initiative? What does success look like in terms of that?
Right. You know, I think in DEI work, it's really important to have metrics and to have goals and to have timelines and to know what partners you're working with. And so for me, one of the things that I like to do to measure what we're working on is obviously numbers of people who have attended and assessments and, you know, things like that. A lot of companies do engagement surveys and things of that nature, any type of survey. But what I think is most important when measuring DEI work is it really is a feeling of culture. And it really is a feeling of understanding and trying to see, you know, does the culture feel different than where we were 2 years ago, or are we where we were 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And so that's tough. And one way I like to measure that too is to see how normal DEI conversations are in the workplace or in the classroom or what have you. The more people that know what DE&I means, that's a win for me. Besides the assessments and the surveys and the data and the numbers and all the things, but that's what I would say about measurement. Yeah. And success.
I think, because I think when people think about, you know, DEI and stuff like this, they're not quite thinking of it as, you know, a science, essentially. They're not thinking of it as this very legitimate thing. And so I think being able to have those numbers and say, you know, yeah, this is how we're measuring the success of this program, and really taking in this data and really making meaningful, you know, action plans because of the data that we've collected and because of that, and knowing exactly where we want the end place to be. So it's not just, oh yeah, you had a training and now you are now a DEI workplace and you never have to DEI ever again.
Right. You're an expert and everybody, everybody knows everything about DEI.
Everyone can DEI successfully now.
Right. And that's the thing, like, one of the most common myths about DEI is that it's instant, and it's not. It really takes a multi-level layer approach, and it takes time. And also, it's not the responsibility of one person or one team. You have your person that might lead the initiatives and the strategy, but ultimately, it's up to everybody to be a part of the conversation. And to what ultimate success looks like, and I hate saying this, but it's true. Ultimate success looks like DEI not having a job. And I hate to say that because I'm like, ooh, I like my job. I need my job. But again, culture shift and changing minds and changing culture and changing behavior, it takes a lot of time. And the idea is that one day, whether you're in higher ed or you're in a different space, that everybody will adopt DEI, and it's not something separate. It's embedded to every single thing that you do, from your recruitment to your retention to your workplace practices to the way you might be interacting with students to your orientation ceremonies, literally quite everything. That's the goal. That's what success looks like for me.
Yes. Yes. I love that. Because I say the same thing in education as well. I'm like, yeah, in a perfect world, you know, I would still be in the classroom teaching. I would teach for the rest of my life. If the education system was perfect and had no flaws, like, yeah, I'll just be in the classroom. I love teaching. I love being in the classroom. But, you know, my job today exists because there are problems in the classroom and there are difficulties. And, you know, I strive to make sure that all of our classrooms are inclusive and accessible. And that's the world that I want to live in. And that's the future that I want to see. So that's just part of my role is I continue to fight for these things and talk about these things. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be talking about this forever.
Right. And I don't think that any person that is passionate about social justice and equity and inclusion issues wants to be talking about this till the end of time, but we will.
Yeah. Yeah, if it calls for it, I will be 90 years old, and I'm like, so anyways,
and another
I'll still
thing.
Be out there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be out there with my 80-11 degrees.
I always say people ask me, how did I get into DEI work? And I'm like, well, I was always a college student that had the megaphone in my hand who was saying something. Mm. Okay. Yep. I was the person that was writing a list of student demands, right? Mm. And I think that now I've learned how to be more strategic with how to get change.
Yeah.
But I certainly will not stop speaking up either. So I hear you.
Yes. Yes. And you know, speaking of kind of student activism, you know, that's been something that has been in the news more recently. Yeah. With students protesting. Obviously, students have been protesting for years. They've protested the Vietnam War. They've protested so many things, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, my social justice heart loves to see young people still getting actively engaged and protesting these things. So, you know, students are protesting, the genocide that's happening in Palestine right now. And we've seen some mixed reactions to that. Some institutions are like, okay, I want to hear you. Let's see what we can do. And some institutions have completely divested, and other institutions are going in the opposite direction of that.
Yeah.
And really trying to suppress that student activism. So in terms of student activism, you know, what can institutions do to respond more constructively to students, especially when they're asking for things like anti-racism, when they're asking for, you know, DEI work, or they're asking for, or they're protesting, you know, social things like that? What can institutions do to really engage with students?
You know, I think that student activism is a beautiful thing. And as you mentioned, it's been here for years and years and years. And I think it's what we need. I think that, you know, the young people know exactly where we're headed and what we need to be aware of as things change and as they grow or as they don't. So I think that people I think that institutions of higher education need to listen to students. That is quite literally all that students ask for. Listen to us and don't listen to us to respond, but listen to hear us, listen to what we're sharing with you. And be open to a new idea that might not be what you think. Because I think a lot of it is really generational issues as well. Oftentimes, younger generations aren't given the same platform for their voices to be heard. And I think that when people are listened to, it can go a long way. If you look at how things were handled at Cal State Sacramento, really what the president there did was he started with listening sessions. He was talking to students. He was on the ground, and he gained a lot of respect from students, and therefore was able to be in conversation and be in community with them, and they were able to resolve because he just sat.
No, I think that's really spot on, because I think, you know, part of that protesting piece is making enough noise so that you can be heard, right? Either whether that's, you know, literally making noise, whether that's causing an inconvenience to people and structures and things like that. But at the end of the day, it's, we have something to say. We have not been historically listened to. We're at this point now. listen to us, listen to what we have to say, listen to our point of view, where we're coming from, you know, what do we want? And I think that's part of that youth-adult partnership, especially in higher education institutions, is really forging those youth-adult partnerships and utilizing, you know, working together with both young people and people who have experience in the field. That's one of the most beautiful parts about higher education, is that you have that connection and that ability to do that, which is so beautiful. And we've had so many beautiful things come out of that when we forge those partnerships and actually listen to young people and involve them in these types of decision-making. You know, that's how we build a community within these institutions, which is so needed.
Yeah. Radically listening. 100%. I agree. I definitely agree.
Yes. Radically listening. I love that. So, you know, in terms for, you know, educators out there, you know, what can educators be doing with either within their school community or, you know, working with admin and working with families, what can they be doing to kind of do more DEI work within those types of institutions?
I think it's similar to the work that I do now, more that's more like in a corporate, showing people how they're already doing diversity, equity, and inclusion work. Start with what you're already doing instead of telling people what they're not doing. Okay. So I would say that. What are you already doing in the classroom that could be that's inclusive? What are you already doing in your practices and your stream? And I think that, you know, but another is, again, like we mentioned, radically listening to what the needs are and doing kind of like a needs analysis of trying to figure out what folks are actually asking for. Because I can tell you right now, when I was in college, it was probably very different what we were asking for versus what the students in college now are asking for. And so keeping up with the times and being very much aware of the student voice and centering the student voice in everything that you do. And also making tangible action steps. Look, you're not gonna always please every student. But I think it's really important to have a plan and say, this is what we've noticed. This is what we're already doing. Okay. This is where we did an analysis and realized where we need to do a little bit better. And this is our plan. And this is our timeline. And this is how we're going to ask that you hold us to it. Right. Starting somewhere and being intentional about what those pathways look like. I think oftentimes students get frustrated. Okay, you listen to me, and now 6 months, 1 year later, nothing has changed. So there's a balance of listening, but also having the strategic piece on how they'll move forward too.
Yes, yes. And students are so incredibly, like, they're smart and they're intelligent and they love to learn. And especially if they're falling. Yeah, students are incredibly intelligent. And when you involve them in that, right, you know, students, especially if they're in that adolescent phase, they tend to want things to happen immediately and happen right now.
Right, right.
And especially when you're in higher education, you know, institution like that, things happen very slowly, typically speaking. It's painfully slow how these things happen, but including them in that process as much as possible so that they see, like, yes, I am trying to do things. It's going to take time. Yeah. We're not going to see it tomorrow. Probably not going to see it this semester. Maybe we'll see it next semester, but you never know.
Right.
You know, and, you know, involving that, and that's kind of where that youth adult partnership comes in, right? Because as the adult who has the experience in the field, who has experience with the institution, who has the experience, you know, working with these things, you can say, yeah, this is going to take X amount of time, or this is going to take a while for us to get there, but we're going to keep trying. And this is how we can do that.
Right.
And then the young people are coming in there with their fresh new ideas, or the ways that they are experiencing things, and the ways that the world and society has shifted and changed, and how perhaps the institution isn't keeping up with that. And so, you know, that keeps, you know, us on like the finger of the pulse of what's actually happening with young people and what's the future that they want to see. And also just knowing that, you know, when you're working with the government, it's going to take a long time. So tell me, how do you reimagine education?
Yeah. You know, oh, that's such a tough question. I was in higher education for quite a long time, and now I am not in it, and I've left academia, and so many of the people I did my PhD program with also left academia. And the reason why, I think, is different for everyone, but I think the main component was that higher ed just moves too slow, and it is part of a larger entity and system that was rooted in racism, classism, sexism, and all the many isms and phobias that exist in our society. And so when I think about reimagining education, I think about reimagining the whole system itself. And I think that there is a lot to be done as it pertains to higher ed. I imagine it is more accessible to people, more affordable to people. I imagine that you can walk around on campus regardless of how you look or how you present and you feel safe. I imagine that, you know, you will be learning from a diverse array of people, and that higher ed really is gets back to what it was supposed to be, which was to educate and to teach and to be in conversation and agree to disagree, right? And, you know, I also would hope that it did a better job at providing a pipeline for students once they graduate and giving them some more support to transition, because the higher ed system that I know, they, you know, you go in and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and you graduate, and then you're like, well, now what? And how do I get a job? And how can I make my skills transferable? What does this resume look like? And, yeah. and do I have to use my degree in the field I thought I would? Like, there's so much more opportunity that I think institutions of higher education can get on and help students navigate post-grad life. So, you know, that's, I'm interested to see how it will continue to change.
That is such a beautiful reimagining. It's like, yes, we want it to be inclusive and welcoming and comfortable for all people to exist. And also at the same time, that post-graduate life is so daunting.
Yeah.
It's so daunting. I feel like after I finished my master's, similarly, I just rested. I think I took a week off of work and I just rested.
Yeah.
I don't think I did much but be at the beach and just exist.
Yep.
And
that's enough.
Mm-hmm. That was enough. You know, same thing. People were asking me like, okay, so, you know, are you gonna have a party? Are you gonna walk at graduation? And I was like, I already did the walking thing. Yeah. I don't feel like it. Yeah. I just don't feel like it.
Right.
I'm tired.
Yeah.
I want to exist.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh. No, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. It took a couple of months for me to be like, my Sundays are mine now. It was wild. Because before, it was like, I got to write all my papers. I got to meal prep. I got to. And I was like, whoa, I can just not do anything on a Sunday.
There's a lot. That's why I always tell people, I'm like, look, if you want to go into higher ed, I will be extremely honest about the sacrifices it requires. And also be extremely honest, for the type of degree that you want, it's not guaranteed that you're going to get the job that you want. And that's why you got to get creative. And that's why.
Yeah.
Into your network. And that's why you have to be not limit yourself in higher ed. It's not necessarily going to teach you that. That's something that kind of comes with your own experience of, all right, I have these degrees and now what? Let me figure it out. And it's tough, but it's doable. And so what I want to encourage people that are listening to remind themselves is, whether you, whatever, bachelor's, master's, PhD, whatever, your experience with higher ed, that you have more transferable skills than you know. And it's just about sitting down and reimagining what your life could look like and what you.
Yes. Snaps for that. Because it's so true. You graduate with this degree and then you're like, okay, now what? and especially people who studied education and became educators. And, you know, like we mentioned before, there's a high rate of burnout in education, whether you're doing, you know, early education, K through 12, you know, higher education, education itself, there's just incredibly high rates of burnout because they're asking a lot of you. And, you know, just knowing that your skills are transferable. I've taken breaks from education and then felt ready to come back. You know, I've come and go out of education. It's always there.
Yeah. Right?
We're always going to need education. It's not going anywhere.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
But I've taken class here or pick up a class there. Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's always there. You can always go back to it. But, like, you know, wrapping it back around to our conversation that we kind of started on, that if you need to take a break, if you need to step away and just do something else, just know that, one, your skills are transferable. You've learned a lot of things along the way. There's, especially if you study education, there's so much you can do with that, right? You're not, you know, you're not just pigeonholed to this one thing. You can do so many things knowing about development, knowing about how people learn. You can do anything.
You really can. And it's amazing. Yeah. Like, now I have a career in human resources, aka people and culture is what we refer to, and the people side of the business. And I never thought that I would be there, but it makes a lot of sense because a lot of my role is actual. It's facilitating, it's conversing, it's thinking for our strategic goals. There's so many things. I mean, especially even the research portion, like, that's a big piece too. You learn in research in your master's program, or even in your bachelor's or doctoral program, research is a big thing that's transferable into the workplace. Like, there's so many opportunities, and I think it's just about how you spin your experiences, and also understand that no one knows what they're doing. We're all just doing our best, and some people make it look better than others, but no one knows. Like,
no one knows.
It's okay to take your time and figure it out. I still don't know what I'm doing half the time. I'm joking, but
girl, same.
You know. You know, some days I'm like, yeah, and other days I'm like, what are we?
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's part of the journey.
It's part of the journey. It's part of life. I always say my favorite part about turning 30 is I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm more okay with that.
Oh, yeah. I had in her 80s, actually. And she always tells me, I don't know what I'm doing still. I still don't know. And I think that's the beauty of life.
That's the beauty. Yeah.
Life and career and all the other things, personal life too. It's like, you know, we're all just doing our best. This is the first time that I've ever experienced being in this stage of my life. I've never done it before. And I'm sure I'll be saying the same in a year. I've never done it. I'm still figuring it out. Like, being in the present is such a gift though. And so I think that goes for anyone who is thinking about where they see themselves and how they can show up in their career or their workplace or what have you, is just do your best. That's it. And take breaks. Yeah. It's okay. It's okay.
Yep. Keep learning. Take your breaks. Do your best. You're golden.
That's it.
That's it. It's not that deep. Well, Dr. Chitan, I want to thank you so much for joining me and engaging me in this conversation. I feel invigorated. This was amazing. Where can my audience find you?
So you can find me on LinkedIn under Sarah Toutant, and maybe in the future we'll get the website back and running. But for now, you can find me on LinkedIn.
Okay. And I'll link that down in the show notes. So if you want to see what Dr. Toutant is up to, you can see it down there. Again, thank you so much for joining me. This was absolutely amazing. And I have all the good feels and good energy now.
Good. Thank you for having me. I had a great time. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for tuning into Conscious Pathways. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to Conscious Pathways wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a rating or review. It really does help the podcast to find more listeners just like you. And until next time, navigate your conscious journey with courage and kindness. And I'll see you there for more transformative conversations in education.